there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole. Or without Brandon Mole.
Yeah,
we're on the in-between weeks. But we do have Jancy Patterson back. Jancy, welcome.
Yeah, Jancy.
And we are joined with our, what do we call you guys?
Illustrious.
The not Brandon
co-host.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll take not Brandon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fact.
Yeah, it's fact.
Yeah, Shelly Brown.
Shelly Brown and Chad Morris, welcome. Welcome, and thank you for everyone for being here. Let's jump right into it, though, because last time, a month ago for you listeners, man, we left on a cliffhanger. Dun, dun, dun. And that cliffhanger was our very second favorite Brandon to the Brandon Mole podcast.
The other Brandon.
We actually have a ranking of Brandons.
Yeah. The list is too long, but two T-W-O, not T-O-O. Let's jump right into it. So we talked a little bit about being at BYU. You took some classes from and with Brandon.
I did.
And now you work with him professionally.
I do.
What does that look like?
Brandon had a problem. I love it when Brandon has problems that he wants me to solve. It's my favorite thing. So originally his problem was that he had to do all of this touring for books and he just wanted to be writing books and he was looking for somebody who could potentially...
He wanted a lookalike to go sign for him.
Share his problems.
For the record, I'm looking at Jancy right now.
She does not look like
maybe
Brandon
the opposite.
Sanderson.
Okay. Sorry. I derail.
So his original plan was he wanted to write a book one in a series. And then he loves to write book one in a series, and then he has to finish it, and he just wants to move on to other shiny ideas. And so his idea was he would write book one, and then I would write books two and three, and I could do the touring for books two and three, and so I would take some of the touring off of his plate, and he could just write book one and not have to be starting new things that he then had to finish.
Nice.
And then the pandemic happened, and so this never happened, and he also got to quit touring because he stopped touring in the pandemic and went, wait, I don't have to do this. I can have my own conventions and make people come to me and not tour anymore. So then he didn't have that problem anymore.
So did you ever tour for him then?
No.
So this was the goal.
This is what was pitched to me. And I said, sure, Brandon, I'll do that. Okay. Yeah. So that didn't happen. And so about a year or two later, this is still pre-pandemic before he discovers he doesn't have to tour. But we had some things in contracts and contracts fall apart and stuff just didn't, it wasn't coming together. And it was a year or two later, I texted him and I said, hey, that thing we were talking about doing, writing books together, is that still going to happen?
Yeah.
And he said, well, yes, I still want to do that. But I have this problem. He had another problem that I could solve for him. And his problem was the Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarian series has five books that are from Alcatraz's perspective, and the last book is from a different point of view. And he had started writing it, and it wasn't working for him.
Yeah.
And he'd written about nine chapters, and he'd kind of written himself into a corner, and he was not having a good time with it. And so he had set it aside, and he had other things he had to work on, and he wanted to finish the series for the fans, but it wasn't a high enough priority that he had the time to go dig himself out of that hole and figure it out. And so he said, hey, what would you think about finishing that book for me? And I was like, ooh, I was a huge Alcatraz fan. I was like, yes. He was like, I'm getting on a plane. You can think about it. And I was like, let me think about it. Yes.
Is this your first middle grade?
Yeah. I had written one middle grade that's unpublished years previous, but yeah, that I had never published in middle grade at all. So I was so excited. And so I took those nine chapters that he had written and I cut four of them. I cut Brandon Sanderson's words.
The feeling of power.
Which was like wild. But he was right. He had written
himself
into a
corner. He's so brief anyway in his writing though.
All right.
Yeah. I know, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's a middle grade. You're going to have to cut some of the things Brandon's writing.
Right, yeah. He'd written himself into this corner and it was not going anywhere. So I cut back to where he lost the way.
Okay.
And then I wrote an outline. I went through his series and I found all of the promises, things he'd set up. And I was like, I can deliver on this. It was so great because like beginning things is hard. Coming up with all of the ideas is hard, but ending things, you just look at all the promises you made and then you deliver. Right. So
you get to be the payoff queen instead of the setup.
That you honestly, say it like it's easy though, but that's hard.
It's the easiest and most fun book I have ever written. Because the other thing about the Alcatraz series is you don't fix things when you do them wrong. You just make fun of them because it's got all this like meta writing humor going on.
Yeah, that's true.
And so like I would overuse a word and then I would make a joke about overusing the word and now I didn't have to fix it. I just made a joke about it and moved on. And the Alcatraz tradition, Brandon wrote the first book. We were friends when he wrote it. And so I remembered he'd written it in 2 weeks when his college girlfriend was on vacation. She went on vacation and he wrote a novel because he had all of this free time.
That sounds like something Jancy would do.
Well, I decided that was the tradition. I had to write this book that way because that's how Alcatraz books were written. So I wrote it the first half in 1 week. And then 6 months later, I wrote the second half in another week.
Awesome. Had so much fun. So how many books were in the series when you jumped in?
There were five. Yeah, and I wrote book six.
And you wrote book six. Okay. And did that finish the series then? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
And how was that as far as like matching voice and tone and everything? Did Brandon have to come back in and did he read it and go, oh, no, you nailed it? Or like... what was that like?
So the problem that he was having was he was trying to write from this other voice and he found that she was sounding too much like Alcatraz, like the original character, and he just wasn't able to...
Because you were trying to match tone, probably.
Yeah, like, well, for
tone,
him...
Tone, but different voice.
Oh, no, he was writing for a different character in the series, is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, okay. So he had been writing from one character and then he tried to shift to Bastille's point of view and he had a hard time... capturing her voice because he was so used to being in Alcatraz's point of view. So those tone differences that come from me being a different writer are really, they just sound like her,
right?
It's just her voice is different. It's a good thing if it's a little bit different, right?
Okay.
And so I got to just kind of play into it. And so no, nobody corrected me on tone. I just...
So what you did just worked and...
Yeah, I think that just worked. The plot had issues that I had to revise and things, but the voice wasn't an issue.
And how was that for you as far as like setting up future collaborative opportunities with Brandon and writing?
Well, so I wrote that book, I turned it in, and it was stuck in contracts for several years. Mm-hmm. And they were in contract negotiations with Tor, and so it just sat there for years and years. And while that was happening, Brandon had another problem. We're on problem number three that I can solve for Brandon Sanderson. It's great. So he had written in the Skyward series, he had a main character and this great cast of side characters in book one. And they are so much fun. What he said to me was, I made them too great. And my readers are very angry because the main character goes off for several books and is away from all the side characters. She leaves them behind. And he was like, I need you to write some stories about these people so that my readers are not unhappy with me as I do this. And so I got to write, while I was waiting for Bastille to come out, I got to write these side stories in the Skyward universe. And those actually came out first before Bastille did, even though I wrote Bastille first.
Wow. So let's talk about how much direction did he give you on like plot and other things for those? Or was this like, hey, these are the characters, do what you will with them, just don't break X, Y, and Z? Was it kind of like that? Or
so this is how things work when you with Brandon Sanderson. So he has ideas and then he'll have better ideas. And then he finds other ideas he likes even better. So the original pitch was, I don't care what you do with them. Just write some fun stories. Here are the characters you can have. And I was like, great. And then the next time we talk, it's, oh, I had this idea. I live a little bit in fear of Brandon's ideas. He was like, so your stories could intersect with the one I'm working on. He was working on Cytonic at the time. And he was like, and here's some places we could make this intersect. And I'm like, okay, great. And then by the time you get to the finished product, they intersect a lot.
They are interacting a lot.
None of that was in the original plan. That was all just every time I talk to Brandon, he's got another idea.
And you're deleting chapters that you've written.
All right, Brandon.
Which,
here
we by go. The way, from the reader perspective, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
they
kind of
seem like they're planned.
You guys do a great job.
I mean, it was planned ultimately because we rewrote our plan several times. But
so it was planned, yeah. But yeah.
My favorite was there's a scene where we had decided that I think it's Jorgen was going to be in the two-seat ship with FM. I can't remember which book that is in. Is it in, I think it's in Sunreach. And then Brandon sent me what he'd written for Cytonic, and there was this fantastic romance scene of Jorgen in a ship by himself in that same battle with Spensa, and like he's seeing her and she's in the nowhere, and it's this great scene. And I was like, so that's that scene where he's supposed to be in the ship with FM, and he was like, oh, I'll rewrite it. And I was like, no, don't touch it. It's perfect. I'll fix it. I'll figure it out. And so I put FM in the ship with a different character, with Rig, and that turned out way better.
Right.
Way better.
Yeah.
But it was all because Brandon forgot what the plan was. That's what happens.
So how many people like you is Brandon using to write in his universe?
So there have been other collaborations. He wrote Lux with Stephen
Bowles.
Stephen Bowles. Yeah. And then he wrote the original with Mary Robinette Cole. Currently, I'm the only one in my position in that I am not Brandon's full-time employee. Everyone else who's writing with him right now works full-time for Dragonsteel, and I'm the only contractor left.
Because you don't like being told what to write.
That's right.
What we've learned.
Nope. I also don't like working in an office 9-to-5. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So what percent of your published stuff is collaborations with Brandon versus doing your own thing?
So a lot of my publishing history is collaborations, but not a ton of it is with Brandon. I have 4 books with Brandon, and I think I have 40-something total.
And then talk to us about some of those others.
So I did a romantic comedy series and a young adult fantasy series with Megan Walker. We did a lot of indie publishing together, and then we had a third friend work with us on a series of epic fantasy books. So we used a pseudonym for those. They're published under Kara Witter so that we weren't putting 3 names on the books. My first collaboration, actually, before any of that work with Brandon, I wrote a book called The Bollywood Lovers Club with James Goldberg. And that's it's like a contemporary YA book.
So these other collaborations, it sounds like you're working on the same book together versus your collaborations with Brandon, where you're just working in the same universe and
the big difference is that for Brandon, the point of it is to save him time. And so I write the outline, he gives me feedback on my outline, and then I write the draft, and he gives me feedback on the draft. Whereas with the other people I've worked with, we're both writing words on the books.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you like better?
I like them both.
Yeah, tell me, do pros and cons, and solo writing and all that, yeah.
So the thing I love most about collaboration is having somebody else invested in your work. There's somebody to like bounce things off of.
Right.
I'm not an idea person. Some people's brains just like spout forth ideas constantly, and that's not me. I'm much better at like...
75 books would say...
Otherwise.
You know how many of those were not? It was 65, and a lot of those were not my idea. All of the books that I did with Megan, not one of those books was my idea. The ones with Brandon, those were not my idea. And I don't, like, I think I have probably 10.
10 that are...
Of my publishing, I think
ones.
About 10
Spark
that were my
idea,
ideas.
Though, because clearly you have lots of great ideas as you're going.
Only 10. So many people have not written 10 books.
But it, as a percentage of all the books I've written, it's not
right.
high.
Right.
But yeah, I like to take existing ideas and like riff off of them. That's where the magic happens for me. I feel like my brain is like nothing goes in, nothing comes out. And so like I take something and then I like to twist it and muck with it. And what if we did this? And what if we did that? That's the part I like.
And just tell me what that collaboration looks like. Are you in a room talking together? Are you on the phone? Are you just putting notes into a doc and then reading those notes? I assume there's a combination of all those things.
Which one? Like with...
Or just any collaboration. When you're collaborating with somebody else.
Yeah, of the above. So I did a lot of the work, not the writing work, but the planning work in person with Megan and with Lauren and with James. We would meet and we would talk about the books and we would take notes like in OneNote or something. We could each have it open and we could see the notes that were being written down on our computers and stuff. I did most of that stuff in person. With Brandon, I do one brainstorming 30-minute call per book.
Okay.
And then he does the pass on the outline and the pass on the book.
You guys get like it's 30 minutes. It's Brandon Sanderson. You get 30 minutes of his life
per year. Yeah.
Per year.
Yeah. As you've
so intense.
Probably noticed, I talk really fast and Brandon's the same way. And so I'll be like, so this is my plan. And he's like, here's an idea to go with that. Oh, I think that we could do this. And it's just like this rapid fire. We probably do a normal person's like 3 hours worth of
nice.
30 minutes.
Efficiency.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like I'm in a room full of people who know how to collaborate when they write.
Says the filmmaker.
Oh, well, I don't. Yeah, yeah. I do collaborate in film. But tell me, just when it comes to writing, the three of you, and you're working as a team with other individuals, what advice would you give to young writers, unpublished, who are just starting off? Like, what are the traps to look for when having a writing partner? What are some of the things that can be exciting about it, what you should look out for, and how you could really make this work?
Well, I think my first advice would be make your the person you're writing with, have them be like a super successful New York Times bestseller that has a huge fan base. I think that's
the number one work. Piece of advice. Yeah.
I haven't taken my own advice on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chad.
It was your responsibility.
I'm
Cheryl.
Working on it.
I want to hear about your guys' process. How does your guys' process go?
It's a little tricky, but it's interesting to hear your different types of collaboration.
Yeah,
right?
We've probably done a lot of similar types.
Right, because it is a great opportunity. I love your idea of like bouncing ideas past somebody, which that it brings up the idea that you want somebody that will listen to your ideas and add to them mm-hmm. and tell you when they like something or present another idea. But inherent in that is that you also have to be willing to kind of listen to somebody else's ideas.
Awful ideas.
And they might be awful.
I don't have
no,
awful
No, I didn't
ideas.
Mean you specifically. I'm just talking about anytime you have to work with somebody else.
Right. There's just but you know two what? Sides that are so big.
But awful ideas are great.
No, they I do are. Agree with that. I if you put restriction, especially on brainstorming, if you yeah. put restrictions mm-hmm. on brainstorming, you're going to have a very slow and boring brainstorming
mm-hmm.
process.
If you feel like what yeah. you present has to be perfect, mm-hmm. you're going to edit yourself so much
yep.
that you're not your creative self is going to be like stifled and quiet.
Yep.
So.
You're trying to make it seem like you at least have two brains that came together to make it two brain awesome. Right?
Yeah.
You're trying to get the best out of mm-hmm. both, which is pretty awesome.
Now, Chad and Shelley, have you guys only collaborated with each other? Have you ever worked with other authors at all?
That's been published, yes.
Okay.
Shelley's done some other stuff.
You too. You have too.
Have I? I don't remember. Yeah,
yours is like in edits, right? It's like in final edits right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I forgot, actually. So, I decided I had somebody approach me to Tyler Jolly, who likes to has crazy ideas, and he's like, hey, I've got an idea for a book, and I would love for you. I can't write them all, right? It's my version of Brandon Sanderson, and I'd love your help. And I was like, I would love to. Could I bring my sons in?
Oh.
And he's like, sure. So my sons, he gave us the outline, kind of similar
yeah.
idea, the idea and the outline. And then we riffed off that and stuff. And then my sons and I wrote one and it's back with him.
How much writing were your boys doing?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
actually.
Awesome.
Because they would love to write more. And I saw it as an opportunity. That'd be fun to work with.
Is this the twins or?
This is the twins.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys are hilarious.
They are really, really fun. Yeah, really yeah. high energy. Really, yeah, yeah. really fun. But it is interesting because a lot of times, kind of like this maybe, but we talk in kind of principles as writing books, right? You do this, you do that. But it's really interesting to get nuts and bolts with somebody. Like, what does this part of the story need, right? As how do we conquer this part of the story? So thanks for reminding me that I've done that.
that you've worked with your own kids?
Yeah, yeah. So it was just all filed away in the wrong cabinet.
Jancy, having worked with a handful of different authors, and we understand how that happened with Brandon, these other ones, how do you go about selecting? Was this all people approaching you? Did you approach some other people? How does that process work?
So everyone else that I've worked with is somebody who I knew from the writing community or was doing critique group with, those kinds of things. So it started with James. We were in grad school together, and he had written some chapters of the book that we eventually ended up working on together in grad school. And I just loved this book. I loved this book, and we kept doing critique group together for years and years after. We actually still do. And I had to come to terms. I was bugging him and bugging him, when are you going to finish that book? And finally, I realized that I was more invested in this than he was. And I had to like resign myself that I was never going to read the end of that book. And I remember I was sitting in the library working on A Million Shadows, which is it's one of the sequel to one of my science fiction, my YA science fiction books. And I just remember having this thought of like, you should ask James if he wants to write that book with you. And I was like, what a terrible idea. Like, that sounds like a lot of work. That sounds like a big mess. I should not do that. And so I went to tell James about my terrible idea and he thought this was a great idea. And so that's how I got into collaborating originally. And we didn't know, neither of us had ever done this before. Like he came from theater and so he had collaboration experience, but novels collaboration is different. And so we sort of like figured it out as we went. And then with Megan, we were, I was into D&D. We talked a little bit about that last time. And my friends
were. We're always allowed to talk about D&D on this podcast.
They did this like role playing thing with Barbies that was so fun. And
on your bio it says that you do Barbies. Keep going.
So
I want to hear
more. They had this role playing game with Barbies and they had never played D&D. And so they were kind of like in the closet about it. Like, this is this weird thing we do. And they were like kind of flabbergasted when I was like, that's not weird. Lots of people do that.
Yeah.
This is not a strange thing at all, actually, guys. And so they like brought me in on it and they were just like amazed that like this actually wasn't that weird to me. I was like, no, it's role play. I know how it goes. It's cool.
Like D&D with deodorant.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there were just fewer rules and more like plastic shoes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so we started doing this and it was in this world that they had created and they'd written a draft of the first book. And they were just one day we were sitting. I was like, this world is really cool. These books are really cool. Why don't you finish them? And we were sitting at lunch one day talking about it. And they were like, I don't know. Like, it's just there's just going to be so much revision involved in fixing this because they'd been working on it for years and years. And I was like, well, I mean, I can revise. And we all just kind of looked at each other and we're like,
Yeah,
let's
do
so
it.
They were like, let's send that to you and see if you're interested in revising it. And I read it and wrote up a whole like edit letter about everything I would do to it. And then I was worried that they would be like super offended and they weren't. They were like, oh yeah, no, do that. So I did. And we did.
Yeah. This
That's
just
awesome.
Brings up that idea. Jancy is a great finisher.
Yeah.
She finishes her own
Much
books.
Better at finishing.
She finishes other people's books.
It's my favorite. Like finishing is so much easier than starting.
Well, I was curious too. So you've collaborated with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have answers to this off the top of your head, but like, what are kind of some of the things that you learn from other people that's like useful to you in the writing, right? And in your career as you've collaborated with other people.
I feel like my favorite is when you have opposite strengths and opposite weaknesses and you can balance for each other. Like Brandon, just his brain just pops forth ideas all the time. And so I'm like, I will slave for like months trying to fix a problem. And then he's like, oh, how about this? And I'm like, yeah, how about that? How about that? With Megan, she was so good at the like continuity line edit detail stage. And I hate that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like the big, like move the, like tear the plot apart and put it back together. Cycle the order of all of these things, pull out this whole plot line, put a new one in the like giant structural revision stuff. I love that stuff. It's like a big puzzle to me. I'll do that stuff all day long. She hated that stuff. So I did all of that and she did all of the other thing and we were both much happier for it, right?
Have you ever worked with someone where you had really similar strengths and you're like, maybe, yeah, pass. Like,
I mean,
like,
I think
why do we need each other?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not why do we need each other, but then like sometimes you're just eyeing a thing like who's going to do that?
Yeah. Who's going to eat the broccoli in this
Nobody
one?
Nobody wants to do that thing. I mean, that happens sometimes.
So if somebody is listening and they are like thinking about like collaborating with somebody in their life, somebody that they know, what is the piece of advice? Or two people are listening, you know, and they already are like, we're starting something, but we're not really sure. Do you guys have any like actual advice for like how to make that work? What are some tips for these people who are just starting?
So I did write a whole book about this.
What?
It's called In It Together. And it's the premise is I've made all the mistakes so you don't have to.
Nice.
So I have a lot of advice. And if you want all the advice, you should go there.
Is it, where can we find it?
Amazon.
Awesome.
Yeah. But
can you just read us chapter one real quick?
But the number one thing, my number one rule for collaboration is leave your ego at the door.
Mm-hmm.
That there's no place for your ego in collaboration. You are working with somebody else because you care about their opinion and you respect them and you need to act like it and take their work, their ideas and their contributions into account and make sure that they're reflected in the work.
How do you, just getting into the finances of it, how do you do that side of things? I assume you need to have a conversation going into it.
Mm-hmm.
I assume like any group project at school, somebody ends up doing more work than everybody else, even though you all get the same grade, right? Maybe you guys have the same agent, but probably you don't. Like, tell me just financially how this works and what a headache this sounds like it is.
So rule number two is you should have a contract.
Before.
I don't touch words without a contract. That's okay. My rule. I will talk all day long. We can talk about ideas all day long, but if I will not write anything without a contract, and especially if you are friends or family, that contract will save your friendship. So make sure that you have a contract. And the contract needs to address money, rights. I have a whole list. It's not coming to me right now,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so let's say it's two friends and none of you have written a book before.
Or a contract.
Yeah. Are you saying
you can Google
write
the contract.
A contract between the two of you?
100%.
This doesn't have to be a
collaboration
contract.
With, yeah. Yes. Yeah. You can Google collaboration contract and there will be many templates, and there's no such thing as like plagiarism in contracts. You just download the template and you change it to say whatever you want it to say. And then that is your contract and you sign it. And the point of that is to get on the same page about what's going to happen with money. What's going to happen with credit? Who's going to do the work? Who is, you know, what if there are expenses down the road? Who is going to pay for those?
Yeah.
All of that stuff you wanted in writing. And it doesn't really matter what your arrangement is. This is what matters is that you are both on board with the arrangement and feel comfortable with it.
Is there anything, you mentioned that you can just download these contracts. Yeah. Give me two or three things that may not be in the contract that you're like, make sure you have.
You have an exit clause. Make sure you know how you can get out of this and what happens to the work if you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and like if one person wants to bail on the idea,
can
the other person run with it?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
what
and
is going to
so,
happen?
So what?
Who owns it?
Yeah. You have to agree on what happens next.
Yeah. And like, it can be things like it's owned by both of you and neither of you can do anything for the rest of your life without the other's consent. Some of my contracts say that, but just make sure that you're okay with that when you sign it.
Yeah. Or don't sign it.
Or don't sign
it. And don't work with them.
Get in that situation.
Gosh, that's so depressing. I hate contracts. You're so right, and it's so awful.
They will save your friendship, though. You need them.
Yeah, I'm working on a book with my son, and we didn't do a contract.
You need one.
Oh, yeah.
Go
it's going to ruin us.
It.
It's going to ruin us.
With
you, your boys,
either.
You didn't do
no.
it either.
Do it now. Yeah. Do it now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, on that depressing. what does the money look like generally? Give me some like splits on that type of stuff. Is most of
what
it
you
50,
can share?
50,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. Don't get into actual numbers, but just
technically, I don't think that's covered with my NDA. Mine are all 50-50.
Yeah,
yeah, which is kind of amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, yeah,
that's awesome. And does your agent look at these contracts before?
My agent always has had a copy of the collaboration contract. I send him a copy of it. He hasn't ever done any negotiating. Well, for Dragonsteel, he did. With Brandon, he did the negotiating for the collaboration contracts. With my other friends, we figured out what we wanted between the two of us, and then he actually gave me my first collaboration contract because he was the one who said,
sure.
You need one of these. And
yeah,
I was like, oh, you are 100% right. And that's when my rule was born. Wasn't my original idea. But then I send him the contract. He doesn't negotiate with people who are not Brandon Sanderson.
Right. So tell me this. Like you have to pay your agent, and your agent is getting money just out of your part of the 50%, correct? Or are they getting...
Unless you share agent.
So it depends, right? So with...
Sorry to get so detailed on this.
Fine. With Dragonsteel, my agent is Brandon Sanderson's agent. And so
that's clean and easy.
It's clean and easy. Yeah. They take their commission and then they split the royalties and send them. When
you said the same thing for that you have a joint agent for your rom-coms.
We did, yeah. So that agent then left the business.
Okay.
And so that those rights then went back to being with Eddie. And so they're with Eddie now. But when we sold them originally, we had a separate agent for those that we signed just for those books. Also, my agent agreed to represent my book with James. He didn't sign James as a client fully, but he agreed to represent the book, and they had something James signed, I think.
Like a single book.
Just a single book. Yeah.
Okay.
Situation.
So he had a relationship with your agent. And
yeah, even though it wasn't his agent, my agent agreed because he didn't have an agent of his own at that time. And so, so I think that's all the arrangements that I've had. And then some of them we self-published, and so my agent wasn't really involved. Although my agent sold audio for a lot of those.
Okay.
And
publishers just don't care, I assume.
Do they
care what your arrangement is with the two authors? And
for sure, because they're going to have to deal with two authors, especially if you share rights and things. Like Brandon owns the rights to the Cideverse, right? So when I work with Brandon, my my collaboration contract is with Dragonsteel. Dragonsteel's contract is with the publisher. And so I'm not party to the agreement with the publisher. But if I were in with books where I have half of the IP rights, then they have to work with both of us. And also, there's a little bit of a stigma. It's not huge, but it does exist against co-written books. And so some publishers are a little bit gun-shy about working with more than one author.
That makes sense.
It exists.
Because of drama?
I think it's because of reader bias, honestly, that there are some readers who don't want to read co-written books and they worry about sales,
And to me, that makes sense. And it's probably the reason why you had the pseudonym for the three author book. And
yeah, if you have too many, it can start to look like an anthology. It can mess with your marketing. So,
That makes sense.
So I'm curious. So if you write with Brandon, I'm assuming Brandon is, he's the last say. You know, it's his brand, it's his universe. Mm-hmm. Yes. He's kind of the one in charge, even though you're collaborating and you bring your ideas and you can even try to persuade him to do one, but he's in charge. What about when you collaborate with others? Do you have like one that's...
Is this in the clause or
Shelley
in the contract?
And I collaborate, we'll often be like, okay, you're in charge of this book.
That's
smart.
I have never done that.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Who's the boss?
Like, if we disagree, who's going to make the final decision? Right?
Honestly, everybody else I've worked with, we talk until we both agree. And sometimes it takes a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We work it out until we agree.
But that's kind
of
awesome.
This, like,
we did that the first few books, probably the first three books. And somewhere around book three, Chad was like, I have to work, because I'm crying. Typically, I'm crying at some point. He's erased something I loved, and I'm like, I loved that character. And he's like, it's not working anymore. And somewhere around probably about book three, he was like, look, I every day I have to get critiques on my writing, like for his job. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but there's somebody in charge. And I was like, currently we both are, you know, creatively in charge of everything and things just get erased. And I'm like, that can't just happen. Like we have to have, and it was because I went back to my background in theater and film. I have a minor in film and theater. And I was like, whether you're the director of a film or you're the director of a stage show, there's somebody, like everybody brings their A game to the table. Right. And then there's somebody who says, we're going with Jimmy's idea.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't have that much time.
Yeah. In film, it's impossible. If I give somebody direction, and then a producer gives direction, and then a client gives direction, and then another actor gives direction. It's like, hey, guys.
Could you imagine
we're
going to
do it? Yeah, yeah. You have to have somebody in charge.
Right.
And with a book, it's possible, but it is time consuming.
We
would just work it out until everybody was happy, and it took a lot of time. I like this efficiency idea. This sounds better.
Well, but I think working it out is the best idea. I mean, like, work it out, but at the same time, at the very end, somebody's got to say, okay, we've run out of time. Yeah. We're going with A. Let's go. Yeah.
And I think, honestly, we would get tired and we would get like at some point you're just like, I just want a decision.
Yes.
Fatigue.
Yeah.
And so, so at the end, that was what would happen anyway.
What about whose name goes first?
That's a really good question.
That was I gasped pretty big.
Yeah, you did.
I have a video that I did on social media about why Brandon's name is bigger than mine on our books.
Uh-huh.
And it's because I argue for that. They always try and make it the same size. And I'm like, why would we do that? No one is buying the book because my name is on it. I want to sell books. Put his name bigger. Make it bigger.
A marketing decision.
Yeah.
That's very savvy.
Yeah. That's
I mean, and that's super nice that he's like, let's put our names.
Yeah. He's like,
equal.
I want to treat you with respect. Yeah. And I'm like, I think what I said in the video is something like, thank you for the gift. Can I exchange it for some book sales, please?
So when we were naming this podcast, I came up with the name Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole. And Brandon suggested Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole and Jason Conforto.
Yeah, that's
and I was
Brandon
like,
thing.
Right?
Yeah,
I'm
for
like,
sure.
Yeah, ego-wise, I loved it, right? But like, and my ego's huge.
And he respects
right?
you. It says something that he respects
but
you.
But I'm like, nobody's listening to this podcast because of Jason Conforto. And that is the longest title in the world as well. And so like sometimes for marketing reasons, you just have to cut it. But when it's you and somebody who is not Brandon Sanderson, how do you, is it in the contract whose name goes first?
It should be in your contract. But the way that we decided on all of those was, like I said, none of those were my idea. They were all a project that I came in on when it had already been begun. Mm. Some of them had first full drafts for book one, some of them didn't. But I said on each one of those, like, this was your baby, your name should go first, and nobody argued with me. Yeah. At that time, I didn't have a name that anyone would recognize, and so that wasn't an issue. Now I wonder if we would have made the other decision just because putting my name first might get us some sales.
Yeah.
And so we might have made a different decision now, but that was how we made it then.
Yeah. That makes sense.
It does make sense. Again, you're so good at finishing all these. That is a good sign of a collaborator, though. You're finding somebody who can do what you can't do.
Yeah.
And that's all I know. You don't do as well.
Every time you're like, and then you wrap it up, that's the easy part. You finish it, that's right? The easy part. I sit there and I go, I could start a million books.
Right? And most people are like that.
50 million ideas. Mm-hmm. I love first chapters. Oh, I
hate first chapters.
I love the worst. First books, you know, like from
so
a
if
series.
You're a starter out there, find yourself a finisher. Yeah. And work together. Yeah.
So Jancy, when you say you'd like to be the finisher, does that mean you'd prefer to come in on second draft or right after the outline?
No, my question is valid. Are you a murderer?
Am I a murderer? I am the finisher.
You are the finisher? Okay. No, so this
I might
not
be the murder.
Murderer
of hopes and dreams. I yeah. cut everything out
Go
of your first
answer.
Draft.
Yeah. Go ahead and answer Conforto's question.
So if I never had to write a first draft, and I could just take other people's even bad first drafts and just take them and do that structural revision where I rip them apart, I would love that. That would be great. My drafting is all about how to trick myself into just getting the words down as fast as I can so that I can revise them, because I'm a much better reviser than I am a writer. So yeah, I love it when stuff is already done. That's great. I can take a bad book and make it into a good one. None of them were bad. That's why I came onto the projects, was because I love
sure,
them, right?
Sure, right?
But a book that needs work, I can fix a book. Writing a book is
the fixer. That also makes her sound
yeah.
scary.
That's better than a business finisher. Idea.
Jancy could just finish all the books in the world.
Jancy so. Patterson, so let's, the fixer, the finisher.
So mm-hmm. so I love what you said there about, I don't know if it was the word sloppy or something, but that first draft, mm-hmm. it sounds like speed is important, but quality anyway. Is not. Right. It's about hey, let's get to the second draft as quick as we can. And I know there's a lot of young writers who that sounds like the most terrifying thing in the world, to write something down, to hate it as you write it, to know that it's not going to work, and to move on instead of fixing it as you go. What kind of advice do you have for people who may struggle with that?
I mean, firstly, that's not how everybody writes
sure,
a book,
sure.
right? But if that's how you're trying to write a book, I think trying to think about it as little as possible while you're actually writing the words, and give yourself goals to just like short, manageable goals. Like, can you do, if you're having a hard time writing, if you're putting it off, could you do 50 words today? Like, what is the smallest goal, the smallest chunk you can give yourself so that it's easier to do it than it is to procrastinate it, and just do that. Right. Yeah. If you need to do more words, could you do 50 words and then an hour later write 50 more? If you really need to, if you have a deadline or something, if you need to write more words, but just give yourself small, manageable amounts and try to do them as quickly as you can. Now, that's not how everybody writes, and if that's sure. not how you write, that's totally cool. But.
I do love the like quick write though. Mm-hmm. I find it, and honestly, like I think it's trash while I'm writing it. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked when I go back and think, oh, this is usable. Oh, this is usable too. I mean, like again, you're gonna It's gonna need a decent amount of work, but it's like actually something, and you think it's just garbage mm-hmm. as you're spitting it out. But you can use it, or you can, and that chapter might be garbage, but most of what you do in those quick writes, because you're talking about, I heard you say 1 week here and a second week there, and the book yep. is, the first draft is finished.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay. I mean, it was only 40,000 words, so it's a short book, but still.
And you have kids.
Still a lot of work.
I'm a little confused. Do they eat?
She doesn't sleep.
I mean, my husband's also self-employed, so I can lean on that a lot. Also, like when they were little, my kids are 10 and 14 now, so it's not as much of an issue, but I got a lot of work done while they, you know, they would get like an hour or two of screen time every day, and that was my work time. They
right. And if you take them outside, you have a laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. I would do things like that. When my daughter was 2 years old, she might've been one year old. I had a book I had to finish, and she was a little kid. She needed my attention a lot. And so what I did was I wrote for 10 minutes every hour, because yeah. if I pulled out a toy, set her up with something, she would give me 10 minutes and I would write for 10 minutes and then I'd give her the other 50 minutes. And then
hence
the next
the speed
hour the next hour I'd do it again. And like, I thought I never want to write a book like this again, but I have written a book like that again because it became necessary in my life again. It was whatever it was to get those words down.
Wow. So being such a good fixer and finisher, let's say you're on draft one. Draft one is done. You're starting draft two. How many drafts does it usually take to wrap things up? And I know it's a loaded question because you got to write until it works, right? But are you wrapping it up pretty fast after draft one?
In my early books, I rewrote those a lot. Now, I have to count. So I have my first draft, and then I do a pass before anyone sees it, before any beta readers or anybody sees it, of all the stuff I've written down. I keep a list of all the stuff that's wrong with it as I go so I don't stop and fix it, right?
Oh, wait. How do you make that list and like... As you're typing, you'll just be like, this doesn't work. You go into another file and say, fix this later? Or is that?
Yes. Okay. I write in Scrivener, so it's right there on the screen. There's a little box for it for notes.
Okay.
And I'll be writing and I'll be like, this character, this was not set up at all. I just made this up right now.
Gotcha.
This should have been back at the beginning of the book, and I'll make a note. Go back and set this up.
Okay.
And then I keep going.
Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
And so I fix all of that before anybody sees it.
Research
so
this
two.
So you don't sound stupid later.
Yeah. Or like, is this right? I don't know if that's
is
right.
Is that his name? I don't remember. Keep going.
A bracket things. Yes. Like that character. I have no idea what they're called. Yeah. So I go fix all that stuff. Nobody needs to read it before I fix that stuff. Right. And then I get feedback on it. And then I do another draft. And then usually I do two rounds like that. So now we're on draft four. And that's usually where it goes to like line edit where we're fixing up the prose. So that's draft five. Mm-hmm. And then after that would be copy edit. So six. So I usually do about six.
And then when do you use, like, do you beta readers and alpha readers and stuff? And when do they get involved?
I have a critique group. Usually draft three or, like, between drafts two and three.
And it's a critique group. Walk me through. What does that mean? How do you use that group?
My critique group, we meet once a week. We can each submit up to 4,000 words. Not everybody submits every week, and not everybody submits to the word limit every week. But you can. It's our limit. And then we sit down. We'll all read before group. And then we sit down, everybody gets 15 minutes, and we start with good things, and we'll talk about all the things we loved about it. And then we call them level threes, which is anything that would make you put the book down. We start with that stuff first. And if there isn't any, great. And if there is, if we take the whole time, we each get 15 minutes. If we take the whole 15 minutes on those, well, you don't need the line stuff anyway, so that's great.
Yeah.
And then we move on to level two, which is like other large things, but not that big of a deal. And then
when you say we each get 15 minutes, does that mean you've read somebody's 4,000 words and you get 15 minutes to tell them about that 4,000 words? Or as a group, you've got 15 minutes to hear about your 4,000 words?
The whole group spends 15 minutes talking about each person's submission.
Okay.
So each submission gets 15 minutes and everybody gets to talk except the person being critiqued.
Nice. No defense.
Yeah.
No defense.
I mean, we don't have a strict rule about
sure,
that.
Sure.
We allow like questions.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
But nobody's really
like,
defensive.
I don't have to
so
answer that question.
To,
I'm not allowed to talk.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to take your own 15 minutes talking about your book.
Sure.
Other people are talking
sure.
about
it. Sure. Right. Now, how does that affect, like I assume by the time you get to the end of the book, they've read the whole thing because you're submitting as you go. Is that kind of how it, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you write too fast. Like, how
not
much work
Not all
do you-
of my books go through the critique group. Not
okay,
all of them.
That's what I would assume.
Right now, I'm not, I was doing rapid release for a while, which is where so many of the books came from. And I haven't
an
been
indie?
Doing one book a year. Yeah.
Rapid release and indie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we put out 9 books a year for a couple of years. And so all of those did not go through
Holy
the critique
smokes.
Group.
Holy smokes.
But that's where a lot of those books came from. I'm not doing that now. Right now I'm writing more like a book a year.
Awesome. Well, Jancy, thanks for collaborating with us on another episode of Mulling It Over.
Thank you.
You have stuff coming out in September, is that right?
I do. Blightfall comes out in September.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that project and what it is.
So that is, it's a spinoff of Brandon Sanderson's Skyward series. I wrote the novellas in that, and then we're taking some of those characters from the novellas, the Skyward Flight characters, and we're writing a whole new adventure with them.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so that's coming out in September, and so look for that. Any place we should be looking for that specifically? Or
should be everywhere.
Everywhere. And in the future, Chad and Shelley only have secrets.
Secrets. Middle grade book next year, probably.
I've been working on a website,
chadandshelley.com.
How easy is that?
Yeah.
Is it live?
It's live.
Oh,
okay. It's just not completely like, not everything's available yet.
This is coming out in a few months.
Yeah.
And we collaborated
Maybe
on that.
Maybe it will be good by then.
By Shelley doing all the work. That's how we collaborated.
That's how
she
we
was
did.
The boss of the website.
Yes,
well,
she was.
Awesome. Well, we get Jancy for one more month. Yay. So we're gonna talk next month. A little spoiler, I think we're talking ADHD. And so if that is something that you are dealing with or your family members, or you just want to understand how in the world you can be a successful author and have ADHD, that is a question that we'll answer in a month from now. So we'll see you next time on Mulling It Over with Brandon Mull.